Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams
and Elizabeth Wallace, and you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 405. And tonight, we're recapping Welcome to Night Vale number 245, Fridge Worthy. And this is, at its heart, it's about a picture that Esteban has drawn that Cecil and Carlos love so much they have put it in pride of place on the refrigerator.
And they've invited his sister Abby and his brother-in-law Steve Carlsbergs and their daughter Janice to be patrons of the art, which is basically a family dinner, and they can go and admire the picture on the refrigerator.
Yes. So before we get into that, we've got an update on the boy, the one who likes to hold knives and is actually a younger version of Kevin. And basically, he's fine. He just tends to disappear a lot.
And Cecil's doing this segment because a lot of people have been asking about the boy. And one person really, really wants Cecil to send Esteban to his school for knife, because he's really good at knife. He's a real knife enthusiast. And Cecil finds that so refreshing, because there are all these people who say that little children shouldn't be around knives. And Cecil is like, I was raised with tons of knives and I'm fine, except for that one incident. But that was fine too, because I wasn't the one that got hurt, and it was technically an accident.
We also heard from Jackie F., who is offering to help foster the kid. And then we heard from Kareem, who, if anybody remembers, intern Kareem is the one who has a double out there someplace. And Kareem is trying to get back to where he's actually from. And he's wondering if that portal the kid opened up is still open.
Which Cecil says it is sometimes open, but Carlos has put a big sign next to it that says, do not go in portal. So it's impossible to go through the portal now.
So back to the family gathering, and Cecil was making some comments about him and Abby's mom never put any of his pictures up on the fridge, but they managed to dig through a bunch of their scrapbooks, and they found an old picture of Cecil's, which Cecil said looks totally different from Esteban's, but Abby's like, oh no, can't you see they look totally the same?
Yeah, because Esteban's drawing had the three people in front, and it was all very vibrantly colored, and yet Cecil's is done in watercolor. He's hoping it's watercolor, some kind of reddish-brown liquid, but there's a row of owls on top of the house, and he can almost hear that sound that owls make, that deep buzzing noise, which I now want to see somebody do, like, a little fan video of owls with a buzzing noise superimposed over their hooting.
Oh, yes. And Cecil, now that Abby points out that the pictures are actually the same, he goes to look at Esteban's drawings, and yeah, now Esteban's drawing does have owls in it as well, and it's starting to lose a lot of its color, and everybody goes into the living room to play Scrabble, except for Cecil, who stays in the kitchen staring at the painting for a while.
We had a quick word from our sponsor, which is Danner. It's the dating app for fans of Dan Brown, and I think that's all you really need to say. If someone is super, super in to, like, the Da Vinci Code or something, you would probably want to know that before you dated them. So I think this is a good idea.
Yeah. He was calling them Dan Stans, which made me laugh. Okay, so back to Aspen's drawing. It keeps changing. The colors are turning brown. The family that was outside the house at first is now inside the house, and they're not smiling anymore. And there's now only one owl, and Cecil swears the owl has a really familiar face.
Yeah, and there is a little boy crawling into the base of a tree, and then Cecil suddenly realizes Esteban didn't draw Carlos and Cecil and Esteban. He drew Cecil's family from when he was a little boy. So he goes out and he interrupts the game of Scrabble, which in Night Vale, Scrabble is using little word tiles to try to spell the name of God.
Yes.
But and they're doing fairly well. I think one of them guessed something that was so close there was a flicker of the stars. But he wants Abby to tell him about his father. And Abby says she's done that a lot already, and he never remembers.
Yeah. We go very quickly from there to traffic, and I guess all you really need to say about traffic is from space, you can't really see cars, but if you could, they'd be moving very slow, so just remind yourself, whatever's freaking you out, you've got plenty of time.
Plenty of time, yes. Mm-hmm. We go back, and I think this was the part where Abby tells Cecil that she's already told him about his father hundreds of times, and she kind of wants to change the subject. And then suddenly there's this question, where's Esteban? And they find him, and he's in the kitchen door holding up his picture saying, "I drew Grandpa Gershwin." And then we go to the weather.
Yep, it was pretty abrupt. The weather is all the way down by Palimony, and I wrote down it's quiet country and a little folksy, I thought.
It sounds like something from the Twin Peaks soundtrack. Either the original series or the return. It would fit in either of them, I think.
Oh, yes. Okay, so Cecil comes back after the weather and says he doesn't remember how much time passed. They all switched to Trivial Pursuit. I love the fact that the Trivial Pursuit they were playing was the Imaginary Edition. And I'm thinking, oh, I want to play that. That sounded like fun.
Yeah, Cecil says that he's really good at certain parts of Trivial Pursuit, like animals that don't exist, but he's really bad at geography. However, he and Carlos managed to beat the other teams, and it was on a geography question that Cecil managed to get right. And I think the question was something like, if Blurp was a continent, how many countries would it have? And Cecil guessed 19 without even thinking about it. And I don't know if anybody else is playing this game Hannah found for us online called, we pronounce it Wordlay,
yes,
or Worldlay, I think.
Yes.
You get a silhouette and you have to guess which country it is. And I swear I'm learning more about this than I did in all of my geography classes.
Good Lord, yes. It's been actually really helpful. Also frustrating, though, because we've been playing so long, the game has cycled through the country several times, and there'd be so many times when I'm like, I didn't get it, and I know I didn't get it the last time it came up. Rah!
Yeah. I think Ukraine has little dangly bits on the bottom, and I think Turkey has a little dangly bit on the top that you said looks kind of like a turkey head.
Yeah, that's how I remember it. And Germany is wearing a terrible corset. That's how I'm remembering that one. So. Anyway, so Cecil, he's making this comment about him and Abby's relationship, and he knows that they love each other, but they don't necessarily like each other. He thinks that their relationship has gotten better since she and Steve and Janice were together, and since Cecil and Carlos and Esteban are together. It's like they have other things they can concentrate on other than each other. So I guess their childhood wasn't great, and I think they still have some resentments about that.
Yeah, Carlos takes Esteban up to bed, and Cecil says he's going to stay up for a while. So Carlos kisses him and goes off to bed. And Cecil just spends a lot of time hunting through his photo albums, trying to find more information. And without realizing it, he does that all night. And suddenly Carlos is there making breakfast, which that's a level of unreality I can really identify with. That idea that you now have a day with no break from the day beforehand is such a surreal feeling.
Oh, yeah, it's creepy. So they're standing in the kitchen, and Cecil's looking at Esteban's drawing, which seems to have gone kind of back to normal at this point. And Carlos is being sweet and resting his chin on Cecil's shoulder and saying something nice about the drawing. And Cecil kind of snaps at him a little bit. And then Cecil just tells him that he was really mad because Abby was promising to tell him about their father last night, and she never did.
And then Carlos says, she did, actually. She's done that a lot. It's actually gotten a little boring hearing the story about your father. And this is, there's two elements that I love about a creepy story. A picture that changes and just messing with memory, where you're just like, you've got the unreliable narrator going full force in this one.
Oh, yeah. It was really creepy. And I keep forgetting that we have that storyline going on. I mean, with everything about the boy and everything, I had forgotten that we have this whole running storyline in Night Vale that's all about Cecil's dad, and we don't know anything about him except for the fact that he's like appears in paintings every once in a while.
And there's always some element with a shovel and a pile of dirt, which is super ominous. That showed up first in Cecil's old drawing and then in Esteban's drawing. So I don't know. It's pretty pretty gloomy idea. Like, did his father die or did his father kill somebody and was hiding the body?
I don't know. The owls know, though, because the owls have also popped in here a few times.
Yeah.
Expect more of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's all for Night Vale. All I wanted to mention real briefly is we finally had WonderCon last
week.
Yay!
I am loving the pictures you guys took. I am so thrilled. There was a Loki God of Stories cosplay, and there was a Loki in the TVA as an agent cosplay, and there was a Loki and Mobius cosplay. So that's three different cosplays just in the pictures that you've posted so far where people are doing stuff from the Loki TV series. So that makes me happy.
Yes, and there's one, I don't know if you saw it, it's a group group shot. I might have sized it down a little bit too much in the photo gallery. I'll have to fix that. But it is a Loki standing in the center of a bunch of other Lokis because they were doing a group shot, and he's got strings that everybody around him are holding on to.
So nice. Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that was good. Yeah, apparently there were a lot of fans of Loki, so that was really nice. But all the cosplay was great. It rained all day Saturday and all day Sunday.
Wow.
Brief moments where the sun came out. But for the most part, everybody is inside. But I don't know. I think WonderCon is a lot smaller than it used to be, and they had a whole open section on one side, and they set that aside for where normally you'd have all the group shots in front of the fountain outside.
Uh-huh.
This is where they set it out. Of course, the lighting's not as good, and usually the group things are fun out there because you kind of have the raked steps going up to the fountain. But still, they did the best they could, and the cosplayers showed up in force. The rain did not keep them away.
Yeah, there were some brilliant cosplays in those pictures, like that Jinx cosplay from the Arcane cartoon. Spot on, every bit of it.
And now, we didn't get any pictures of this one woman. She's called Cosplay Mom, I believe. And she had been here last year, and I saw some of the pictures that other people posted of her, but she plays Jamie Lee Curtis's character from Everything Everywhere All at Once. She has her own desk that she brings with her and sits down. What she does is she gets cosplayers to play along, and she's sitting here holding up the paperwork, which has got angry red marks on it, and she's pointing at it, looking really stern, and they're in just varying degrees of looking worried about their taxes. I mean, it's just such a brilliant idea.
Oh, man, and those two people that came as Flarkins from the Captain America, Captain Marvel movie.
Yes.
Oh yes, my God, that was, I would not have thought you could do that, but it's just basically two people wearing the costumes of some of the attackers from Captain Marvel, and then cat stuffed animals or something with the great big Flarkin tentacles coming out and wrapping around the people in the uniform. It looks really convincing.
I couldn't believe it. So it's Paul is who I worked with at the paper for a while, and he's friends with Jada, and his wife is Renata, I believe her real name is, but I think she goes by Natty Lou Creations on Instagram, and she creates all of their cosplays, and she does such a great job. One year they were there as the Addams Family, looked wonderful. This year they were there as the Monty Python crew, and looked wonderful.
That was great.
And then Jada had told me, on Saturday they're going to be here as Flarkins, and I was like, well, how's that going to work? Well, that's how that worked. Oh, it was so, so cool. And you'd see them every once in a while because they'd go into the convention center, which was pretty crowded, and in order to walk around, they would, you know, get themselves out of the costume and turn the tentacles kind of pointing vertical, so you'd see these tentacles kind of marching through the crowd every once in a while.
Did you guys go ahead and buy anything while you were there from the sales floor?
I did buy a few things, mostly like little postcard bits of art. There's always just, I have found it's the first three rows, starting with Artist Alley and kind of moving into sort of a small press area. It's the best for finding, like, if you have something specific that you like, whether it's cats or a pick or a franchise that you really like or a particular style of drawing or whatever, you'll find some artist doing something like there that you'll like. And you can spend hours just walking through just those first few rows just trying to find something. I mean, so many freaking talented artists there. He's really good. I like that part. But yeah, other than that, there hadn't been a lot of panels that really caught my eye. There was a spotlight on Colleen Doran, who has done some work with Neil Gaiman. Thing is, though, the San Diego Comic-Con Museum in Balboa Park here in San Diego, they have a display going on right now, which is all of the works that Colleen Doran has done of Neil Gaiman's books. And I keep forgetting how many they are. Just to see them, it's like the original art is up on the wall. Ooh, that's well worth a look.
See, that's amazing, because Nathan and I went to a comic book museum, which is this teeny tiny little place in San Francisco, and it's connected to a reading room that has like all the books, all the graphic novels. Wow. So very cool. And they had a display of Colleen Doran's stuff, but it was focusing mostly on Chivalry, I think, the originals from that one, which are just the illuminated manuscript style she does so well.
I think this one, it must be kind of like part of a traveling show and ever-growing show, because they did have Chivalry there. They also had previews of the Good Omens book that's coming out.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait.
Trollbridge, which I forgot that she did that one, and also Snowglass Apples, which is wonderful.
Totally sold me on the combination of Neil Gaiman and Colleen Doran. That one right there. I'd never seen anything like that before or since.
So, yeah, I think it was a little bit of a quieter year. I don't know. I mean, they don't usually get a whole lot of really big names into WonderCon, so I don't know if it's getting smaller or what. I know that like Friday, which is the day that it started, they actually put out a notice saying, hey, just a reminder, WonderCon tickets are for sale. So even as of Friday, they hadn't sold out, which is way different from Comic-Con.
Now, I've been seeing some news stories where Disney Plus is having to realize that flooding everybody with this constant barrage of Marvel properties may have been a bad idea because now everybody's tired. And I do wonder if you're starting to see a little bit of an effect from that. Like maybe not a lot of big events with big name artists and celebrities and whatnot. Although I don't know that WonderCon was specifically known for that as much as San Diego Comic-Con is.
Yeah, I think every once in a while they would have some big names come in. Like I know Nathan Fillion had been scheduled to come to WonderCon one of the years I was there, and then he didn't make it. And I was like, boo! But I don't think it was anything that like Robert Downey Jr. would ever gone to. But they did have some names, just not this year, but that's fine. It makes it a little less crazy, which is always fun. So yeah, it was a really good time at WonderCon, and it was me and Jada and Leland and Wade, and we even got a selfie of all of us.
I saw that.
Pixelated Geek represented in the house. So it was good, and everybody took pictures, and so keep an eye out on the site. We've had several photo galleries up so far, and we've got several more to come, and I'll put links to all of those in the podcast description. But yeah, it was a quiet year, but a good year, I thought.
Yeah, I kind of curious about some more of their cosplay photos, because I commented on yours how happy I was that there was a Loki God of Stories. And Jada says, I specifically needed to see the picture that Leland took of one of the Lokis, because goddamn. So now I'm curious.
Yeah, and I think she's talking about Leland's friend Shane was there, and he was dressed as TVA Loki. And Jada even asked him, because he's got long hair, she's like, is that a wig? Did you grow that out for this? He's like, oh no, my hair is always long like this. And we're like, oh, he looked really good.
That's perfect. Nice. Well, my weekend was nice because on Sunday, Nathan and I went to the Alamo Drafthouse and we saw the Dune movie.
Yay!
Oh my goodness. I am still wrung out from seeing that. I asked Nathan if he can think of any other movie adaptation of a book that has been this good. And Nathan thought for a second and said, The Godfather? And I'm like, fair, but they had to cut out some things for time, I'm sure. And I was a little surprised about some of the things they cut out, but it's just such a wonderful interpretation of the story. And the actors were fantastic. The effects were phenomenal. I am still so happy with how this series interprets things that you had in the books, but that I never really was able to picture. Like, you know, the simplest things, like the thumpers that they used to summon, like how just, you know, forceful those tiny little things are. And all they really are is just making a rhythmic noise to summon a sandworm. But it's just, I mean, I'm looking at that going, that's perfect, because that works as you would envision it, but also in the real world, it makes sense.
Yes.
And the ornithopters, too. I mean, I
was just going to say that.
Oh, God, I don't even know if they would work in real life, but just that dragonfly design is so perfect.
It's just brilliant. It just looks so good. And scale. Did they do the same, like, giant things that make you really feel how big something is?
Yes, on several occasions. I think we got to see a spice miner up close before it gets attacked by a bunch of Fremen, and those things are freaking big, and you can feel the size. And I'm so glad we got good seats, because the only ones that were available for a couple of weeks now were ones right in the front row, and we just weren't going to do that, because I want to be able to appreciate the visuals of this movie. So, great experience. Perfect experience.
Nice. Very nice. But I guess that's going to wrap us up for the week, so make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries.
All the photo galleries, yes.
Oh, yes, oh, yes. And we've also got a little bit of stuff. I think Jada is putting up a post because the Comic-Con Museum, which we also mentioned, has some new exhibits coming up, and I got sent by the press people. They sent me pictures from a couple of Star Trek events that happened at the convention, so if you were interested in those, it was not any big names that I knew of, but maybe some people know more than me. And because, you know, we love to talk about Lore Olympus on this site, we just got some news over the weekend that's got us a little nervous.
Yeah, Rachel Smythe has now announced that Lore Olympus will end at issue 280, And I think that means we get 8 more episodes and then it's done. And I'm like, I can count at least 9 different storylines that I want some kind of resolution on. And some of the commenters are pointing out, it's like Thetis and her weird cousin just kind of appeared and then disappeared with no explanation. And I don't know how she's going to do it, actually.
I don't know. We'll talk about this more next week, obviously, since that's our War Olympus episode. But I'm really hoping that she's ending it because she's plotted it out and this is the logical ending. Not that she's arbitrarily picked 280 and she's going to have to rush to wrap things up. Because I'm like, oh God, take your time.
Please. I know. Some of the commenters were saying that apparently Webtoons is not great. It is Webtoons, right? That
does
that they're not, haven't been great to work with. But I don't know the details of that. So I would really hate it if she's just decided she's so freaking done with them that she's just ending the series and walking away. That would be terrible.
Oh, what if she's ending the Webtoon series, but she's going to continue it, I don't know, in book form? Maybe? I don't know.
I'd buy it.
Me too.
I'd pay for it. I've got a few of them already. I don't mind paying for more.
Me neither. But anyway, all that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So yes, next week we will have Lore Olympus, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe I'll go see Dune 2. The stranger things could happen.
You need to see Dune 2, yes.
Anyway, one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later. Jump down.